Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you can find on any podcasting platform. And you guys can find our content on texas.footballbrainiacs.com. Today we're going to be going over the bye week that Texas just had. Talk about some of the current injuries on the roster, as there is a whole list of them. Who's banged up? Who's hurt? Who will be playing what role? How irreplaceable are some of the guys who are missing? And where will the pain points be now that some of these guys are gone for however long they may be gone? Then talk about the Big 12, as the Big 12 has gone through two games and four games or five games in total, and talk about what we've seen out of some of these guys and what Texas has in store over the next four-game stretch. Then we are joined by our friend Keenan Cummins from WVSports.com to talk about the West Virginia game and preview what Texas is facing in Morgantown. Darius, how you doing, bud?
Hey, what's going on? Doing all right. Glad to be back.
Good stuff, good stuff. You ready to get into this? We got a laundry list of hurt guys on this Texas team. I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 guys who are right now on the, I guess, IR list, and then quite a few more who are just banged up. Guys like Shackelford, who has his ankle, Joseph Osai with the shoulder, Keandre Coburn went down, Malcolm Roach went down, Brandon Jones we know has a leg injury, Deshaun Jameson had the stinger, Daniel Young has that high ankle sprain, and then we learned Sam Ehlinger is playing with a rib injury. Texas is just the walking wounded at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy, man, all the injuries that are going on, and they seem to all have kind of happened around the same time, you know, towards the end of that Oklahoma State game. They were dropping like flies. You know, I thought some of that might have been a little bit of, you know, trying to slow down that tempo, but apparently that was not the case at all. Guys really getting hurt.
Right, but here's the good news is that it looks like four of the guys who are injured are probably going to be back for the West Virginia game, and probably you're going to get a few more back for the Oklahoma game. You have Whittington, who is working to get back in for maybe the Oklahoma game. You have Colin Johnson working to get back in for the Oklahoma game. You have B.J. Foster and DeMarvian Overshone working to get back into the next game, the West Virginia game. And Kirk Johnson also working to get back in for the West Virginia game. So it seems like you have a few guys who are coming back. But the big question is Jalen Green. Now, Jalen Green has the dislocated shoulder that he suffered after trying to hit Chuba Hubbard with that shoulder. And now it looks like he'll be out for at least four weeks. We'll see how long it takes, because at that point, it just depends on... I've heard people trying to play with those dislocated shoulders, but you're shaking your head no.
No, I actually separated my shoulder the spring of my senior year in college and tore that ligament on top. Well, I couldn't do anything. It was immobilized for, if I'm not mistaken, it was immobilized for a month. And then even when I was able to start using it again, I was having issues with it still popping. You know, soreness going on for another month after that. That's 8 weeks right there. And I never got it repaired. So still to this day, I'm having issues with that. Separated shoulder, they say 4 weeks. That's 4 weeks until he's actually able to, like, use it and start, you know, be fit to actually try to defend himself and make tackles out there. But he's going to be dealing with that all year. And I think, you know, you won't really see Jalen Green start getting closer to full strength again to maybe around the bowl game or bowl season. That's really unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, he'll need surgery for sure at the end of the year. But there are guys who've been playing out there with dislocated shoulders, and when it pops out, they just pop it right back in. I know that's a thing.
Yeah,
it's at that point, it's just a pain tolerance thing. But we'll see how much he wants to push him, how much the staff wants to push him out, because they're gonna sorely need him for Oklahoma if he is even capable of playing.
For sure.
At that point, it looks like your new corner duo is Deshaun Jameson, Coby Boyce. Darius, how comfortable are you with that?
How comfortable? I'll say I was really impressed with Deshaun Jameson last week. He's not a big guy at all, but for a guy that was playing all offense last season, I was really impressed with the way he came up and filled on a few of those runs the week before last against Oklahoma State. And he had a couple of tackles for loss. I'm comfortable with Jameson more so than I am maybe with Boyce. But Boyce had a pass breakup in the last game as well. You know, basically he's going to be playing with no pressure on him now. He doesn't have any pressure of, you know, possibly being replaced with Texas being down to really three cornerbacks they trust right now. And so I'm interested to see how he, you know, I'm sure he got all the reps this week in practice. I'm interested to see how he performs this Saturday.
And now you're also playing without Josh Thompson with that broken foot. He's probably out. I think he's out for the year. They said for a long time, but he's out for the year. So that causes kind of a three-way dance in three positions. You have the nickel, the boundary safety, and the joker. Brandon Jones and B.J. Foster for that nickel, because they used Brandon Jones in that nickel for Oklahoma State, and he did really well. Boundary safety, Brandon Jones and Chris Brown. Joker is either Chris Brown or B.J. Foster. How do you think that shakes out in the end? Where do you think these guys land?
I think you'll see Brandon Jones go back to the boundary safety, actually. You'll see a little bit of Montrell Estelle back in there, too. I thought he performed really, really well last week. B.J. Foster should be back, and, of course, he'll man that nickel spot as much as he can. But with him coming off of a hamstring, I'm pretty sure, they're going to have to watch that. And I doubt he's out there playing, you know, 100% of the snaps. He'll probably be more like 50 or 60%. So you'll probably see Chris Brown or Brandon Jones roll down in that spot, too. And as far as Marvin Overshown, if he's healthy and able to go, we'll see him in the box playing that hybrid, you know, rover linebacker spot. And having a weapon like that, he and Foster back will be a big shot in the arm for the defense as far as blitzing and getting after the quarterback for sure.
Right, and hopefully he and Foster can both kind of supplement each other's snaps at the same time, given they're coming back. And, you know, I even wonder if you sit them for West Virginia and just let them rest up until you get to Oklahoma and just play the way that you were playing against Oklahoma State, because honestly, West Virginia doesn't scare me that much. Oklahoma does. And I want guys like those two and Colin Johnson and Jordan Whittington ready for Oklahoma more so than I want them ready for West Virginia.
I feel where you're coming from on that, especially with such a big game, you know, looming around the corner. But at the same time, Texas, I mean, I don't think you can afford to, you know, be looking ahead. Every Big 12 game matters. Again, a loss at any point right now, you know, with the way Oklahoma's looking, you know, that could really hurt their chances as far as getting into the Big 12 championship game. So I don't really know how, of course, you would love to be able to go up in Morgantown and put together a big lead and get after them early and get some guys rested if possible. I just don't know how likely that is. You know, this is still a team and a program that Texas lost to last season. I know they've lost a lot, but, I mean, it's not like they're, ever since they took that loss to, I believe it was Missouri earlier in the year, they won every game ever since. So I think we should be careful about looking ahead a little bit.
Right. And Morgantown is probably one of the more difficult places to play in the Big 12. It's a bit of a trap game. It's a bit of a trap game where West Virginia hasn't looked good, but it's a place that is notoriously difficult to play in, and Texas has looked on and off on the road at times.
And you know they're going to be fired up to have Texas coming in there. Like they've done. You look on social media, man, it's horns down everywhere. They've got a thing for Texas. I'm not sure if it's reciprocated from.
Hey, man, you know, we're everybody's rival.
Right, but no, West Virginia is going to be ready to play, and I just have a feeling they're going to look better than they have all season just because they're going to be fired up. So if Texas can weather that early storm, settle in and get Ellinger going and comfortable, I think they can get in control of the game, but I don't know how big of a lead, you know, we can expect to, you know, possibly have the luxury of resting people.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of resting guys, let's talk about Caden Stearns, because he's a guy who, in my opinion, probably needs more than 4 weeks of rest. And that means he's probably out for the Oklahoma game, but it's that or his career. You know, it sucks that he's missed so many big games over the past 2 years, year and a half. He missed the Big 12 championship, the Sugar Bowl. He's going to probably miss this Oklahoma game, but it's that or injured for the rest of his career. So how irreplaceable really is he, Caden Stearns, going forward? Is that really going to take this Texas defense down a huge notch? What do you think?
Well, I'll start with Caden Stearns. You know, and with Stearns, it is unfortunate. He has been banged up over the last, 15 games or so that there have been in his career. Not this, I just wonder, because I know if you look at him, look at his body, you know, if you go back and look at, you know, his build, his definition, and compare him to a guy like, you know, like a Chris Brown, like a Josh Thompson, like a B.J. Foster, and, you know, He's not jacked. He's not built like those guys, even Brandon Jones to a certain extent. And, you know, you wonder how much, you know, his body can take, you know, in the run game. He's been able to make a lot of tackles this season. And that's not necessarily the strength of his game. The value that Caden Stearns brings to the Texas secondary is what he can do in coverage when the ball's in the air, when it's in his area. And honestly, through the first four games of this year, he hasn't been a ball hawk. You know, he hasn't been. He seemed to be a half step slow. And I wonder if he himself came into the season a little bit banged up, kind of like Keyonte Ingram from camp. And Caden Stearns, I believe, had surgery in the offseason, didn't he? He had things going on already. So honestly, you know, I know he's a big name. He's a guy that was a freshman All-American and everything last year. But I don't know how, you know, truly effective Caden Stearns has been this season. And again, I was really impressed, you know, going back looking at the Oklahoma State game, looking at a guy like Montrell Estell, who seems to be progressing pretty rapidly, especially coming from where he was at this point last season and even in the spring when, you know, they had him out there in front of Overshawn. So I'm not sure how big of a loss it is, especially when you're getting back guys like Foster, guys like Overshawn, who bring that attitude. And when you combine that with a guy like Chris Brown, who's taking it to, you know, another level this year, I'm okay with the safeties in the Texas defense. I really am.
Right, and that's a big part of why I think Caden Stearns can take that rest is the depth that you have in the safety room. It's just bonkers. You have, right. And on top of those guys, you have Chris Adamora, who looked, you know, coming in, not really knowing what he was doing, but still making big plays. And then Tyler Owens, who looks like he could be a defensive end, honestly. So, but the big loss right here is Jalen Green, right? And we already talked about how confident you are and, you know, how confident we are in Kobe Boyce and Deshaun Jameson. But, you know, how irreplaceable is he at this point? Is he a guy who Texas has really taken a step down without him?
All of the young corners, you know, have had their ups and downs this season for sure. Jalen Green has struggled. You know, at the same time, there were, you know, he's had some flashes too where he looked really good. I thought he was maybe a guy that was starting to settle in a little bit, get comfortable. It's really unfortunate that he suffered that injury and how serious it is to the point where he's likely going to miss a few more games this season. And, you know, we just talked about how loaded Texas is at safety. It seems like it's almost the opposite at cornerback. You know, you're now down to, you know, three guys with Green being out with Deshaun Jameson, Kobe Boyce, and Anthony Cook, like we talked about earlier. You know, I don't think Texas really knows what they have in a guy like a Donovan Duvernay behind them, or even a freshman Kenyatta Watson, who they seem to, you know, be a little bit reluctant to put out there. You know, they're going in really with three cornerbacks, and I would be really interested to see what they would do if something were to happen to one of them, you know, knock on wood. But, you know, being in the Big 12 with three healthy corners, you know, three guys that don't have a ton of experience, Texas is in a little bit of a vulnerable position there for sure.
For sure. And some other pain points for the Longhorns, especially, I guess, more so against this West Virginia team without Colin Johnson, potentially without Colin Johnson, is your effectiveness at the X wide receiver position. Malcolm Epps just is not ready. He needs a little bit more time in the oven to bake and become what he can be. You saw that against Oklahoma State, where 12 catches were by Devin Duvernay and then one for basically everybody else. But he kept on trying to go to that X wide receiver, which is a very comfortable position for him to go to. And he just could not get it to Malcolm Epps, and Malcolm Epps just could not get in the right spots. So the effectiveness at that X wide receiver position is another thing that I think could be a problem for Texas against West Virginia. Or just going forward in general, if Colin Johnson does miss more time.
Yeah, Malcolm Epps, I think the good thing for him this week, to be fair, you know, it was his first start last game, if I'm not mistaken. Oklahoma State's starting two senior cornerbacks out there a couple weeks ago that are, you know, they got a lot of games under their belt. Games probably moving really, really slow to them, while it's moving really, really fast to Epps. He won't be facing that caliber of a cornerback this week going against West Virginia.
Still two seniors, though, but you're right.
Right, right. But I think they're a little bit, they might be a notch below what he just saw. And I wonder if the extra 10-11 days of practice, you know, maybe give him more time running with the ones, more time running with Ehlinger when he has practice over the break. I want, maybe they can he can have a better game this week. I haven't lost faith in him. And as far as the other guys, of course, we know what we're going to get from Duvernay. We know what we got in Jake Smith. We know if they got what they have in Brendan Eagles as far as big playability. I think the offense is going to be fine throwing the ball. I think Elf's will have a better game this week. I'm willing to bet on that.
And the last thing I want to talk about is Sam Ehlinger and that rib injury. Sam Ehlinger is crucial for the Longhorn season. Absolutely crucial. But so was the Oklahoma game. If Sam Ehlinger is not 100%, how much do you run him for that Oklahoma game? Do you use him like you did against LSU, which probably is where he got hurt? Or do you kind of take it off and say, we're going to rely more on your arm here and then use you more for the run in games down the road when we need you most, when it's coming down to the wire?
Yeah, I think definitely, they were definitely trying not to use Ehlinger too much in the run game, you know, outside of the LSU game, you know, same thing coming into this week against West Virginia. He's had some time to heal up. I think they'll try to avoid using him if they don't have to. Another guy, you know, talking about this running game that they will be adding this week that they didn't even use last week, but they used against Rice earlier, is Daniel Young. He's another guy, another body that they'll be able to use, especially in short yardage situations. Like we've seen them use Ehlinger with so much, like he had to use them with against LSU. I think he could be a guy that fills in and has a role in this thing Saturday and keeps Texas from having to ram, you know, Ehlinger into that West Virginia front too much.
Right. So let's go ahead and talk about some of these Big 12 teams. And before we get into that, let me go ahead and talk about Last Stand Hats. Last Stand Hats is going to be continuing to sponsor us until October just because I enjoy Last Stand Hats. I enjoy the guy who runs it. I enjoy the products they have. They are one of the best hats, one of the best brands out there for Longhorn fans in general. If you guys haven't already picked up a hat or haven't even gone to their site, please do so. And once you're there, use the code HORNSCAST10 for 10% off any site, any item on that site. So y'all, wear your heart on your head and go to the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Now let's get back to business. So Darius, which games did you watch this weekend? Were you able to catch the Oklahoma State, Kansas State game or Baylor, Iowa State?
Yeah, I saw those close scores. I saw Chuba Hubbard. You know, Kansas State had them bottled up early, and then they let them get loose in the second half. And Kansas State's been a team I was pretty impressed with, you know, coming into the season, you know, with them losing the legendary coach, you know, Snyder and everything. You know, the last time that happened, things didn't go too well for Kansas State. But, you know, they got that coaching staff in from North Dakota State, and they've come in. They've instilled their culture, you know, to it. Those kids have bought in. You know, those are K-State's blue-collar, you know, hard-working group as it is, hard-hat guys. And they're getting after folks. That win at Mississippi State in the non-conference games earlier on was one of the more impressive wins for the Big 12. I've been really impressed with K-State. But Oklahoma State let my guy Hubbard get off in that second half. We got to see. I'm glad Texas was able to bottle him up for sure.
Well, yeah, I think the one thing that we've been able to tell about these Big 12 teams, at least through the first, what is it? What do we know? Week six? First 5 weeks?
Week five, yep.
Yeah, these first 5 weeks is the depth that the Big 12 has. Now, right, outside of Kansas, Texas Tech, especially because Texas Tech lost Alan Bowman for, I think, the entire year.
Wow.
And, I don't know where West Virginia is yet. I'm not going to go ahead and jinx the game and say they're bottom three. But right, you have some pretty good depth with Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Oklahoma, and Texas. Oh, and TCU as well. Now, TCU is maybe a step below those people, below those teams, but still, that top five is pretty darn deep. And speaking of that, the one team I'm missing in that group of five is Iowa State, which is a team that is surprising me in a bad way. That's a team that I thought would be a lot more competitive, but it seems that they're really missing David Montgomery, Hakeem Butler, and that offensive line has taken a huge step backwards.
Well, yeah, for a place like Iowa State, you know, where they're not pumping out four or five-star recruits on the regular, to lose two guys like Hakeem Butler and David Montgomery, who were, you know, they were both second day draft picks. You know, if I'm off, hey, Butler might have went in the fourth round, but either way, they were NFL guys that were drafted. You know, it's Iowa State doesn't just replace those guys. Like, they don't get guys like that on the regular. So they were definitely going to take a step back. Purdy was a freshman last year. He has a lot more pressure on him this year with those guys being gone, going into his sophomore season. And I think he's still growing too. They do have two losses, but they did lose to a game against Iowa that they probably should have won, a few weeks ago. And, I'm still a little bit wary of Iowa State. I'm not
counting them out.
No, not at all. Not at all. As far as, you know, teams that, you know, we're looking at, talking about the guys we're being disappointed in, I was looking at it for a while, and I'm not looking at the conference. I can't say there's any team I'm truly disappointed in. I guess the most disappointing loss that there's been so far, it has to be TCU losing at home to SMU.
Right.
You know, and SMU hadn't been ranked in, you know, my dad went to SMU back during those Pony Express days, you know, 1984, 83, all those years, 85. They haven't been ranked, I believe, since the late 1980s. And, you know, to see them ranked again and everything.
Above Texas TCU, A&M.
Right. Oh, yeah. A&M. And for TCU to have played a part in that, you know, at home again, you know, that's a little bit, you know, that raised my eyebrows a little bit.
Right.
But, they are, at the same time, though, TCU is 3-1. Again, the Big 12 is strong from top to bottom. And Baylor's undefeated. They're 4-0. But at the same time, those four wins have been, you know, against Stephen F. Austin. They were in a tough game against Rice. They beat Iowa State in a close one this past weekend, and then they played UTSA. So Baylor, I think, is still a little bit of a question mark. You know, I'm not buying full stock in Baylor yet. And then West Virginia again. You know, they got whipped that first week of the season. They got embarrassed against Missouri, and they've run off three straight since. You know, James Madison is one of the top FCF schools in the country, you know, in the last few years. Kansas, you know, hasn't been great recently, but they're better this year with Les Miles, and there's energy around that program.
Boston College knows that.
Right, right. And then they beat a NC State team that was a bowl team last season that won, you know, 8 or 9 games and had a lot of guys back. So, again, the Big 12 is strong from top to bottom. And, you know, the national media probably hadn't caught on yet, or you know, it's not going to get the notoriety that it probably should get, but it is definitely a strong conference as far as depth.
But that Oklahoma State win is starting to look better as Oklahoma State does break the top 25. Those Oklahoma schools are looking pretty darn dangerous. And absolutely. Oklahoma's defense, it's not good. It's not great, but it's decent. And that's honestly what they need, and that's scary.
Right. I saw them during the it was either opening week or the second week of the season when they played Houston. And I was surprised, not in a good way, because I was tuning in expecting to see a shootout. You know, watch De'Aaron King do his thing, Houston run all over Oklahoma. And that wasn't really happening. And I was surprised at how good Jalen Hurts looked throwing the football. Lincoln Riley looks like he might be, you know, the quarterback whisperer, man. They've got something going on up there. He's got it working, and it just seems like whoever they put back there, he turns into a machine. So, Oklahoma, again, trying not to look ahead to next week because Texas can't overlook West Virginia in Morgantown. But that's definitely a big one coming around the corner if they can get there.
Right. And speaking of West Virginia, Texas has a pretty big stretch of teams coming down the pipeline in the next 4 weeks. You have at West Virginia, the Red River Shootout, then versus Kansas, so you know you get a little rest in between Oklahoma and then at TCU. It's a bit of a stretch for the Longhorns over this next 4 weeks. What is the least that the Longhorns can do and you'd be happy with the outcome over these next 4 games?
You know, in year 3 of Coach Herman's program at Texas, I can't help but think or feel like the goal right now is to – last year they were in the Big 12 championship game. The goal is to compete for Big 12 championships. The absolute worst-case scenario has to be, a loss in the Red River Shootout, you know, to Oklahoma 3-1. Or, you know, heaven forbid, they beat West Virginia, beat Oklahoma, beat Kansas, and lose to TCU or something like that.
Right.
But 3-1, in my opinion, is the absolute worst case that I would be satisfied with as far as the team staying on track and reaching their goal. It wouldn't be a backbreaker because, again, Oklahoma will probably, in this scenario, go undefeated, but there won't be another one-loss team in the conference. Somebody else is going to lose again or twice. 3-1 would be the worst case, and obviously, you know, 4-0 is the goal, and That's the best case scenario.
Best case scenario is you blow out Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout.
Right. Get the best against Oklahoma compared to everybody else. But Kansas, now I heard you mention as a little bit of a rest game. Kansas has, if I'm not mistaken, like the last 3 years or 4 years, in the last 4 years when they beat Texas, and then they've been within, what, a touchdown, 10 points in all those other games. Kansas has been playing Texas tough recently. I don't know how much of a rest game. And there's been some weird games lately. And now, again, you got Coach Miles up there. They've got Coach Hull, you know, getting those guys in from Louisiana, New Orleans. Kansas is getting some talent up there. You know, guys
Luka
like
Williams.
Defensive backs, Mike Lee. Like, they've got some talent up there. I don't know how much of a rest game that Kansas game is going to be. And, again, it is Texas. They're going to get everybody's best shot. And then even coming out of that Kansas game, they're going up to Fort Worth, where SMU just went, to be fair, and beat TCU. They're going up to Fort Worth, and everybody knows Gary Patterson's got a thing for Texas. So
but SMU is a top 25 team. So
hey, apparently, hey, representing Dallas, you know, trying to treat Dallas, you know, representing, you know, push the local hometown deal, kind of like Miami is doing, you know. And honestly, they've got they're starting to get a little bit of buzz about them. I would keep an eye on Quadarius Davis. I'm gonna be honest with you, but. Dallas, SMU, it's pretty cool what they're doing. It is. But out of that 4-game stretch, 3-1 has got to be the worst. That's the worst case scenario, in my opinion.
Right. I think this is going to be a stretch where you're going to see whether or not Texas can put down teams that they're supposed to beat.
Right.
If they can put down West Virginia, if they can put down Kansas, and they're better than TCU. If they can beat TCU at TCU, then you know that this team is legit, that they're finally doing what they're supposed to do in winning the games that they're supposed to win.
Right.
If they can't do that, then we're still a while out for the Longhorns. If they can't do what they need to do in West Virginia, if they can't do what they need to do in TCU, if they can't put away Kansas convincingly, then Texas has a long road ahead of them.
In all of those games besides Oklahoma, Texas is going to be favored by a touchdown or more, or should be.
Exactly.
So, no, they're the favorites, you know. And, again, teams that are among the top 10 in the country, top 12 in the country, like they're ranked, they beat the teams they're supposed to beat. You're absolutely right. So we'll find out over this next month.
Right. But let's go ahead and bring on our guest and friend of the show, the managing editor for WVSports.com, Keenan Cummins. Keenan, how you doing, man? How is it over there in West Virginia?
I'm doing well, man. It's unseasonably hot. It's really hot here this past week. It's supposed to be in the 90s. It'll be interesting to see if it stays that way by the time game time rolls around. I think it's supposed to cool off a little bit.
Well, yeah, we know the Longhorn team is pretty used to that. I don't know, you as a northerner, well, comparatively, I don't know how used to that you are, but that's pretty good October for us down here.
Yeah, it's definitely not that hot typically in West Virginia about this time of the year. It's not freezing or anything. We're not in Alaska, but it's one of those things where it tends to get cooler really fast. You almost don't even notice it. It goes from summer to blah fall. You know, that early fall is great. Everyone loves early fall, but blah fall, it kind of hits you out of nowhere. Usually about this time is when it hits you.
But I've seen the pictures of West Virginia in the fall, and there is almost no place that is more beautiful than that when the trees turn all the different shades of colors. But one thing that y'all aren't used to as well is this new coach, Neil Brown. Well, I guess y'all are used to him now. What has it been like with Neil Brown at the helm? What has been the biggest changes, whether it's in culture, scheme, personnel, or whatever?
I think the easiest way to put it is just kind of a breath of fresh air. That's not a knock on Dana Holgorsen. And I don't want people to say it is. They're just two different people that handle things two different ways. Dana was pretty much, you know, from that Mike Leach tree, you know, marched to the beat of his own drum and did things the way he wants. Neil kind of gets it, I guess is the best way to put it. He understands, you know, relationships with the media. He understands relationships with the fan base. And some of the things that, you know, it took Dana a while to understand. Neil already kind of has that ingrained. And I think for West Virginia fans, it's kind of a breath of fresh air in the sense that there's been so much infighting with the fan base since Rich Rodriguez left in 2007. Hmm. That's hard to believe, but, you know, just who should be coached?
Infighting within a fan base? I don't believe it. I don't believe it. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's a novel concept. But, yeah, but this is the first time I can honestly say since I've been on the beat that it feels like everybody's united. You know, it feels like everybody is behind this hire. You know, it's kind of a wipe the slate clean type deal. You know, Oliver Luck and all that happened with Bill Stewart's gone. You know, Bill Stewart getting hired for Richard. It's a long story. We could spend an entire podcast on why people have been fighting about it. But basically, it's kind of a breath of fresh air. I think that's really the easiest way to put it. I think people are excited about the program. People understand that West Virginia is going to take a little while, you know, what Neil's trying to build. But they're fully behind it, and there is a lot of excitement about the program right now.
Well, even though y'all haven't really played too many big teams, I mean, Missouri probably is your biggest team. He seems to be a good coach so far. I mean, he has the ability to make really drastic changes at halftime that work. It's been night and day between the first and the second half in most games, being able to stop what was hurting them in the first half. So he seems to be a good coach. What so far has been, you know, the main thing with Neil Brown? What has been his mantra, the way that he coaches? What is his thing?
I think it's just how prepared the guy is. You know, everything has a purpose. Everything has a plan. Really, really detail-oriented, you know, from everything. Not just his coaching. I mean, every single aspect of him is detail-oriented. And he shows up to press conferences with a little notepad most times of things he wants to hit on, to make sure he hits on. You know, he takes time to get some of the things that not necessarily a lot of coaches do. Adjustments, exactly. You hit the nail on the head. I think that's one thing West Virginia fans are really excited about, how different this team is from one half to the other. You know, the way they make adjustments. You look at that NC State game, for example, you know, some of the things they were able to do in the second half, it's got people really excited about, you know, what this thing's going to be in a few years when he gets some more players.
Right. Let's go ahead and start looking at the offense now. And the question of the offense is, what is this offense? The first two games, the Mountaineers looked pretty inept against Mizzou and JMU. And then the next two were far better. They're also against Kansas and NC State, who are, you know, not great teams, but still it looked a lot better. What is this offense? How good is it? Where is it? What is it?
That's a good question. It's really honestly hard to answer because it has looked so different. I think this offense, one thing I can say is I think this offense works when they can run the football. And I know that, yeah, everyone out there is like, oh, okay, sure. That's football. Yeah, of course. But when they're able to establish the run, they're able to do a lot of different things. That's something they were not able to do in the first two games. 54 carries for 64 yards in the first two games. That's abysmal. 1.1 yards per carry. They weren't getting any push. Ran for back-to-back season highs, you know, in the past two games, 173 yards, 193 yards. So they're starting to get some flow going. They've got some wide receivers. I don't think schematically it's really going to be all that different from what you saw under Dana. You know, still the same air raid tree. You know, they do a little bit more option, read option, you know, RPO stuff. But Dana was even getting into that some last year with Will Greer. So I think that schematically it's not all that different from what you see in the Big 12. But it comes down to West Virginia's offensive line and their running backs. If they're able to control the tempo and they're able to do some things up front, this offense looks a lot better. What is it? Or, you know, what is it going to be? Who knows? There's so many question marks right now with this West Virginia team, and a lot of it is because it's just youth. You know, you never know what you're going to get from game to game with consistency. That comes over time, and when you lose as many players as they did, if you look back into that game last year with Texas, you know, a lot of those players that were making plays are gone for West Virginia.
Right.
So it's almost a whole new, fresh set of characters.
Okay, so right now, where is the strength of this offense? Because coming into the season, I understood it was supposed to be the running game in that offensive line. But so far, the running game has been, on paper, looking stagnant. Your guys like Kennedy McCoy and Martell Pettaway were supposed to be two of the best in the Big 12. But they seem to be struggling. Kennedy McCoy is only averaging about 3 yards per carry. Martell Pettaway below that. You got a guy in the sophomore, Letty Brown, who's come in and been a nice boost. But still, I was expecting a lot more.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were. I think that was the strength of the team. But coming into the year, that is. But it goes back to simple football. If you can't block anybody, it's hard to run. And that was their problem the first two games. And they were abysmal. They've really turned things around, though. The past two games, they've done some different things, some more window dressing, you know, trying to get to the edge more, some outside zone, you know, mixing in some things that they weren't necessarily doing the first couple weeks, and it's really helped.
How confident are you that that's West Virginia and not Kansas and NC State?
I think it's a mix. I mean, you're never going to know for sure until you play better competition.
Right.
But I think that it's not as if Missouri or, you know, James Madison are the best defenses ever either. And they absolutely dominated West Virginia. They had some shuffling up front. You know, they moved around some guys, and some guys got hurt, and they moved around some other guys. So it's a whole different look up front, and they played much better.
Right.
So I think that plays a role in it. Competition plays a role in it as well. I think you're going to find out a lot more, obviously, against Texas there. That's a really good football team. But right now, I think that you're starting to see glimpses of what everyone thought this rushing attack could be coming into the year. And that's a positive, especially when you consider how bad it was through 2 weeks.
Well, one thing that I can tell is legit is this Sam James kid and the kid coming out. Where did he come from? This freshman? I don't believe he was that highly rated. And he is just taken off this season. 26 receptions, 263 yards. The dude is averaging 10 yards a target. Where did he come from, and what makes him so special?
He's a guy that I like to pat myself on the back a little bit. I cover recruiting over at the site, and I would just love his tape. He came from a small town in Georgia, actually, and I just thought he looked incredible on tape. I talked him up. You know, he was my pick to be the breakout guy out of his class, and now he's making me look smart right now. But I think that he's a guy that West Virginia was able to get, and he's just one of those do-it-all types. You know, he's going to be a field stretcher eventually. I'm not sure if it's necessarily going to be as much this year, because they're not really connecting on deep balls, but he can do it all. You know, they use him almost like Tavon Austin, in a sense. But, you know, they'll put him in that touch pass type deal where they send him across with motion. They'll hand the ball off to him. They'll throw it all over. He's a yak guy. You know, a lot of his yards come, 163 of his yards come after the catch. So he's slippery when he gets the ball, and he's starting to step up. You know, West Virginia lost David Sills, Gary Jennings, Marcus Sims, Trayvon Wesco, all those guys. They needed players to step up. They knew it was going to be relatively young guys or inexperienced guys trying to do it, and he hasn't backed away from that, and I think that's the most encouraging thing, because they knew they needed guys to step up, and he's done it.
Well, it'll be interesting, because it will be young guy on young guy come that game, come Saturday. It'll be Sam Jones versus whoever they decide to put on him, whether it's Kobe Boyce, whether it is Deshaun Jameson, whether it is B.J. Foster or whoever, wherever they put him on the field. So that'll be an interesting to watch. But another thing that's interesting is the transfer from Oklahoma. I want to hear, what are your early thoughts so far on Austin Kendall and how he's looked so far in Morgantown?
Up and down is the easiest way to describe it. I do think he's gotten better every game. Really kind of looked off a little bit against James Madison, but he got the job done. You know, was able to lead him to a win, which obviously that's big in an opener against an FCS team. But really played poorly at Missouri. But it wasn't just him. It was up and down the roster. That was the one game where I don't think anybody showed up. And West Virginia was down 31 or 38 to nothing at halftime and just never got anything going. Mm-hmm. So after that, though, I mean, he's a guy that he's starting to have a better command of the offense. You're starting to see him do a little bit more things, kind of ad-lib a little bit, you know, even run the ball some. He's a better athlete than he gets credit for. But the thing that they really want to see to kind of take that next step, and it's the thing he's going to have to do, because starting this week with Texas, and you go down the list of the offense that you're going to play in this week, you got to be able to score some points.
Right.
And that means connecting on some deep balls, too. And that has not been a strength. Either it's the receivers not getting open, him missing them when they are open, and that has to get better. And I think that's where they're challenging him right now, is to push that ball downfield some and try to connect on some of those to give them some scores, because you're not going to be able to realistically grind out 9, 10, 11-play drives against some of these teams that can score in two plays over and over again.
So, quick question, and then we'll get to the defensive side of the ball. If you're Todd Orlando, how are you attacking this offense? And on the other side, how are you attacking Texas if you're West Virginia?
I think if you're West Virginia, you got to be able to establish the run. If they're able to do that, I think that they could move to football. Now, if you're Todd Orlando, I think you got to try to put pressure on Austin Kendall. You know, get in his face. You got to obviously be able to stop the run. If you force West Virginia to pass at all times, I think you stand a good chance. Right now, I mean, maybe this is the the breakout party for this offense. I know they scored a bunch against NC State, but a lot of that was NC State just was out of sorts. You know, they were able to move the ball on them relatively easy, especially in the second half with some of the adjustments they've made. But I think it all starts up front for both sides. You got to be able to run the ball, and you got to be able to stop the run. That's football 101, right?
Right, exactly. That was one of my keys to the game. But another question, just another quick question. How mobile is Austin Kendall? You said he can move around the pocket, but is he a dual threat or is he a pro passer?
I'd say I'd side more towards pro passer.
Okay.
But he is more athletic than he gets credit for.
Okay.
I don't know if he's as athletic as Will Grier, but, you know, Will Grier, you know, as Texas saw last year, he's one of those guys that can scoot a little bit, you know, if the situation's right. And not necessarily, he's not a statue back there.
Right.
But he seems hesitant to run at times, which is what I said earlier. He's starting to open up a little bit more and take off. You know, he had a couple runs against Kansas and NC State that, you know, earlier in the year in those zone replays, he was not keeping the ball. He was giving it even when the read said for him to keep it. So he's starting to loosen up a little bit, and I think that comes with time. I mean, we talk about the guy. He's a redshirt junior, but he's only started 4 football games.
Right, yeah. Let's go ahead and take a look at the defensive side of the ball now. What type of defense is being run right now under Vic Koenig, and how has it looked?
I'd say kind of like a 3-4 hybrid type thing. Pretty good for the most part. You know, they play with a backer that's kind of a rush guy. He doesn't play with his hand on the ground, but he rushes and he can drop back. I call it a bandit. But it's been pretty good, I think, for the most part. You know, with everything they lost there, too, they lost a lot of things up front, a lot of stuff in the back end. I think that overall you'd be pleasantly surprised. It's not the 85 Bears. I don't think anybody's going to confuse it for that. You know, they've had mistakes. They have young guys playing, and sometimes that leads to, you know, some bad things. Missouri was a debacle, but I think a lot of that was once Missouri got that tempo rolling, West Virginia really struggled to even get lined up, which led to them getting creased in the run game over and over and over again. But for the most part, I think most people would be pleasantly surprised with how they've played, just given what they lost.
Right. I mean, you lost David Long, who was probably one of the better defensive players to go through West Virginia. Basically, the entire safety room went through the portal. Y'all have both of y'all's cornerbacks returning, but beyond that is just everybody left, right?
Yeah, a lot of people up front, and then most of the people you see on the depth chart right now, a lot of the backups are true freshmen or first-year players.
Right.
So,
but two of the guys who have really made a name for themselves so far this year are the Stills brothers. What makes them so special, and why are we going to keep on seeing their names all game long?
They just play hard, man. They really, especially Darius, the nose guard. He is a much better fit for what Vic wants to do up front. You know, in Tony Gibson's scheme, the defensive linemen were pretty much placeholders. You know, their job was to occupy blockers to allow the second-level guys to clean up things. In this, they're asked to be more aggressive. They're asked to make plays happen at the backfield. And that just fits his style. He's quick, and he's able to create plays in the middle. And really, he's always been a guy, even when he went to high school in Fairmont, which is like 15 minutes down the road from Morgantown, and he's always had a motor. You know, that's been one of his strengths. Dante, on the other hand, is just naturally gifted. You know, the guy had offers from everybody. He's just a big-time football player. The thing with him was getting him to do it consistently. He's starting to do that now. It's kind of, I always used to say, if you could combine the two, you know, Darius' motor and Dante's just actual talent level, you have probably a 5-star guy. But, you know, they're both really blossoming. I think that they're definitely two bright spots. You expected it, you know, out of Dante, just given, you know, he was one of West Virginia's highest graded players last year as a true freshman, which just doesn't happen that often on the defensive line. But Darius has really, really kind of taken it personal and made leaps and bounds. You know, he looks like an all Big 12 type player, you know, 4 games into the season.
So it seems like those front guys are where West Virginia is their strongest. Is that correct? Starting with the Stills brothers?
Yeah, I'd say up front or the cornerbacks are pretty good too. I think that the one thing you were worried about with West Virginia coming into the year with the cornerbacks is Akeem Bailey has been very up and down in his career. He's been consistently pretty good this year. He gets thrown out a lot because a lot of people aren't throwing at Keith Washington, and he's handled himself. You know, he had one play. They assigned, when you look at Pro Football Focus, they assigned the yards to him, but it was actually a bust by the safety. But other than that, he hasn't allowed very many big plays at all.
So busting by the safety, let's go ahead and get into that topic. Where's the weakness in this defense?
I think you have to say the safeties right now, or maybe the linebackers. Safeties have played better than I honestly expected. You lose a guy like Kenny Robinson, an All-Big 12 player, and Derek Pitts, who was groomed to take over in that other safety role before the season even starts. You're usually panicking, but they moved Josh Norwood there, who played corner for West Virginia last year. He's played better than you'd expect. And the other safety is a guy that's been in the program a couple years but not really played, in Sean Moreau. So I'd probably say linebacker, which I really didn't think I'd say that. But they've struggled some. The Mike position has struggled a lot. Bandit, they haven't had guys there, that pass rushing role I talked about. They have one guy that really could play there through the first four games in Quandarius Calls, and he was just overextended. You know, one game he played 70-some snaps, and that's not going to work out when you're asked to get after the quarterback. But they get a boost this week. They get Vandarius Cowan, the transfer from Alabama, who was probably going to play some snaps, and give them the length and athleticism they need at that spot. So, yeah, I'd say Mike linebacker has probably been the weakest point of the team.
Right. I feel like I saw that coming when I saw that Javonte Stewart, who was 5'8", 197, was going to be playing a makeshift linebacker safety role for y'all.
Yeah, what's even amazing about that, man, is last year he played Sam linebacker for West Virginia.
Right.
All year. He did pretty well. I think his role is more kind of natural because he's more in a hybrid type. It's in the old West Virginia defense, they called it the spur. Here they call it the spear. It's more of a, you know, they'll put him out to play coverage and, you know, come up and make tackles, except that type of deal. But it's actually been the two guys in the interior that's probably the inside linebackers, which would be the Bandit and the Mike. I think that a lot of people expected Dylan Tonkery to play better than he has, but he's kind of struggled a little bit. And Shea Campbell has stepped in and helped, but they got to get more from that position. And as I said, the Bandit, they've got to develop someone behind Qualls, because if you're asking your guy to play 70-some-odd snaps at that position, it's just, you're just not going to get production.
So I'm going to go ahead and ask my favorite question here, the reverse of what I asked you on the offense. How do you expect the defense to try to attack Tom Herman's offense, and where should Tom Herman's offense attack this defense, or how?
Whew, that's a loaded one. I think that if you're going to attack it, I think a lot of it's going to come with play action and getting those safeties to bite up, you know, getting the linebackers out of position. If they're able to run the football too, it really, and Texas will use a tempo at times. That's what Missouri did. They were able to get rolling, you know, run the ball, throw short passes, chunk plays, and get them out of sorts. They weren't even able to get lined up at times. That would be my approach. I think that Sam Ellinger is going to present some problems for this West Virginia defense. You know, they've struggled some with running quarterbacks, and obviously everybody knows if he gets on the edge, he can make some things happen. So I think that will be how they attack him. How does West Virginia attack them? I think it goes back to stopping the run, but I think that they've got to find a way to take away some of those short yak-type plays that Texas had a lot of success with, you know, with the spread offense and what they're able to do with that, getting the ball quick and just get a lot of yards. They got to find a way to take that away and almost dare them to try to beat them down the field at times, I think. That's how I would approach it. I know Colin Johnson's coming back, which is not the best news for West Virginia, but I think that would be probably the way that I would personally try to do it.
I don't know if Colin Johnson has been released yet, but I do agree. I think the way West Virginia stops this offense is if they can stop Devin Duvernay. It won't stop it like completely, but it will definitely make them play left-handed.
But I knew he was doing well, but I had no idea he was doing that well.
Yeah, he got on the Biletnikoff watch list pretty darn fast, and it surprised a lot of people. But I think, yeah, he's definitely deserved it so far. But hey, one last question before I let you go. How are you feeling about the opening on the line, the 11-point favorite for the Longhorns? Are you feeling that you would take the over, under, or you feel like it's just right?
I think West Virginia plays a lot better at home, as does most teams, but the crowd's going to be fired up. I'd probably take the under. I think Texas is probably going to win this football game, but I think they're going to have to earn it. I don't see West Virginia just rolling over at home. So I do think that it's an interesting game for a lot of reasons. You know, Texas is a really good football team. They were a couple plays away from being undefeated, probably in the top three right now, top five. And West Virginia has a lot of question marks. We're going to find out how much that 3-1 start was a product of the schedule, or how much of it is, hey, this team could have a chance to, you know, maybe make a play and go bowling this year.
Right.
So I think that we're going to learn some things in this game that, I mean, honestly, we just don't know right now. I think because NC State does not look to be a very good football team. they got blitzed by Florida State. Missouri is, you know, one week they're playing great, the next week they're awful. And James Madison's a really good FCS school, but it's an FCS school. And of course, Kansas is Kansas. I know don't ask Boston College that, but Kansas is Kansas.
Right. And, you know, it just so happens that the over-under for the number of times that the horns down is going to be mentioned on the broadcast is also 11.5. Do you take the over or under?
Oh, man. Over. Over, over, over.
Over for sure.
I don't see that being a problem with Neil Brown as a coach. Like I said, he addressed it today and was pretty much saying, you know, we don't do disrespect. You know, we're not trying to disrespect our opponents, but I think it's just going to be something. I mean, they're going to show that Will Greer play, what, like 8 times?
Probably.
And they're going to show that David Sills play. Especially if it's a close game, you know how they always meander back to points?
Right.
So I'd feel safe. I feel more safe about that than I do the point spread.
Well, hey, y'all, this has been Keenan Cummings, the managing editor for WV Sports. Hey, Keenan, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can go to WVSports.com with the Rivals Network. We got all kinds of stuff up. We do a lot of stuff, you know, throughout the week. You know, a lot of it, if Texas kind of want to get the Texas side of things as well, we mix that in. And you can find me on Twitter at RivalsKeenan.
Good stuff. Well, hey, Keenan, thank you for coming on, man. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me, buddy. It was fun.
Again, thank you to Keenan Cummins for joining us on the show. Darius. What's up?
I said, thanks, Keenan.
So, Darius, let's go ahead and talk about the key to the game for West Virginia and end off the show on that. We'll each take two keys to the game. What is your first key to the game for the Longhorns against West Virginia?
My first key to the game for Texas needs to be to set the tone. Okay. Again, they're going to be going into Morgantown. That crowd's going to be pumped up. You know, they'll have been getting lubricated all day, getting ready for the game. You know, ready to give Texas hell. I think, you know, one way to combat stadium noise, combat, you know, a rowdy, hostile atmosphere is to establish a run game and take some air out of the stadium. Keontae Egram a few weeks ago looked really good with that knee brace off. You know, with guys like him and a guy like Roshan Johnson, who you know are going to hit the hole hard, they're going to run the ball hard, and they protect the football. If Texas can get a run game going, establish the run going early and quiet that crowd down and seize control of that game as far as the flow of it and time of possession, it'll eventually open up that passing game for them, too. And we've seen how accurate Sam Ehlinger's been this year. So number one goal going in needs to be to establish the run for sure.
Right. And I agree with you. I think they need to establish a run, but I think that really is on domination up front. Texas needs to dominate on the offensive line and the front seven. West Virginia this year has 11 sacks on the season. That's second in the Big 12. They need to make sure that Sam stays upright and at the same time create holes for these running backs so the QB is not needed in the run game. This is going to be where Texas is just grinding teams down. That's how they beat teams like this, is use your superior talent in the trenches to grind these teams down and get 5 yards a pop and just grind them down for 19 play drives and get a touchdown that way. They need to rely very much on guys like Shackelford, Braun, the guys on the right side of the line, Kerstetter and Engelau. They need to make sure these guys grind down this West Virginia front seven because they are the best part of this defense. If they can nullify those guys, then it's a win for the Longhorns. On the other side, that front seven, due to all the Longhorns injuries in that secondary that we just talked about, they're going to be tested. So getting to Austin Kendall is going to be important. And, you know, with that being said, he's not mobile, so I'm expecting a few sacks. I mean, that's where Todd Orlando goes off. But this defensive line needs to be extra effective in getting pressure on the quarterback and especially extra effective in the run. Darius, you heard Keenan Cummins talk about how the running game is probably the most important part for West Virginia to get going. But we've also seen the defensive line be elite in the run game defense against guys like Chuba Hubbard and what LSU brought to the table. They need to do that again. Make sure that Kennedy McCoy doesn't get anything going. Make sure that their new sophomore running back doesn't get anything going. If they can stop the run, then Austin Kendall is a sitting duck in that pocket.
Right. It's, a lot of pressure is going to be on that Texas front. And, you know, can they get pressure without exposing those guys in the back? West Virginia's offensive line comes in with one of the better offensive linemen in the country in Colton McKivitz. Interesting fun fact, one of the starters on that line, I can't remember his first name right now off the top of my head, but it's actually Joe Wickline's son, the former Texas offensive line coach. And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Wickline, no, he's not the O-line coach anymore, but he was there previously just the year before with Hogerson. So they've got his son at offensive line. That's going to be a fun storyline to watch, you know, that trench battle. Of course, Texas on the offensive front has been, again, they've been winning the line of scrimmage battle every game so far this season. I don't expect that to change this weekend in Morgantown. But if the Texas defensive front can get pressure, you know, with those three down linemen or bring in four guys, you know, when they do so, if they can do that, that will go a long way towards Texas seizing control of this game early, like you talked about earlier, and affording them the luxury of maybe getting some guys some rest, you know, to get ready for the following week.
What's your next key to the game?
My next key to the game, it has to be, again, that front, our defensive front, like you mentioned, you know, getting that pressure. How about one of those guys in the secondary having a big game? I'm going to say Montrell Estelle was second on the team last week, or the week before, I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago, in tackles and got his first career interception. How about seeing guys like Montrell Estelle, Chris Brown have big-time breakout games today? How about Texas needs to force a turnover or too early? You know, Kendall is a first-time starter. You know, even though he is at home, if they can get in his head, rattle him early, you know, and we already know how strong we are in the run game, a turnover or too early or a quick three and out shutdown in the pass game will go a long ways, again, towards setting that tone, you know, for the entire game, just like on offense, you know, getting the running game going would be, in my opinion.
If they are able to find another defensive back who can make plays, I think that will really calm a lot of the fears Longhorn fans have going into the Oklahoma game and just going to the rest of the season. If they can, I think, and it'll calm a lot of my fears too. But I think the last key for me in this game is going to be, is Sam Ellinger needs to find another target. Devin Duvernay having 12 catches a game, it's great. It really is. If he keeps on doing that, he's a Biletnikoff finalist.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have teams that are going to double, triple cover Devin Duvernay if that's the case. He needs to be able to find Brennan Eagles on some routes. He needs to be able to find Cade Brewer on some routes. He needs to be able to find Malcolm Epps on some routes, or at least get the ball to Malcolm Epps or get on the same page with one of those three guys. Because at some point, Devin Duvernay is not going to be there. We already saw that against Oklahoma State where they keyed on third down on Devin Duvernay. Every other team is going to do that. Sam Ellinger needs to figure out another guy.
You heard it here first this weekend. Malcolm Epps, over 5 catches, over 75 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah, wow. Okay. All right. I like that call, man. I like that call. But
Why not?
Why not? Just throw that out in the ether. We'll see if it happens. So I think that's going to be it for us, y'all. That has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. My man, DT, where can we find you?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter, D, my first letter D, my last name Terrell, Terrell. 05 on Twitter. Give me a follow. Give me a shout. Shoot me a DM. Tweet at me. Whatever you want. I'm on there often.
And you guys can find us and our work at texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And you guys can find other shows like this one on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. On that note, thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.